Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of Sounds Good on this Thursday. I'm Tracy Ross, and usually I kick off the hour with music, but I'm pleased this afternoon to welcome in NPR Business Desk correspondent Yuki Noguchi. Welcome.
Thank you, Tracy. It's great to be here.
I understand that you grew up in St. Louis.
That's right. I did.
So have you ever spent any time in Western Kentucky?
You know, I went to a tennis camp when I was young, and I cannot tell you exactly where in Kentucky it was, but that was probably the most time I spent in Kentucky. It was about a week.
And we were speaking of, before we went on the air, being from St. Louis, you're, I guess, a lifetime St. Louis Cardinals fan.
I think it is, just part of what happens to you. I think it just enters your DNA once you've lived there long enough.
Do you have a sense of your coworkers? Do they tend to root for the coastal teams? Is it all spread out? Is there any kind of a rivalry between all of you?
I don't think that we talk much about sports at work necessarily. I think, though, that, you know, D.C. is such a place of transplants that most people actually like to have their root for teams outside of D.C. That's my experience, anyway, is that people grew up elsewhere and they bring their allegiances to D.C.
Working for NPR, it doesn't appear to be the kind of job you can just walk into. So I often ask people, did you think growing up that radio or journalism was something that you would do with your life, or did you just kind of stumble into it?
No, I don't think anyone would have thought that I would have ended up being a reporter or on air, for that matter. I wouldn't have thought that. I grew up very quiet and very shy, and I'm an introvert, so it seemed very unlikely that I would like to be public about anything. And I was also a science and math person. Writing was actually my least sort of favorable subject. It was the subject where I got the worst grades pretty much through high school. So no, it didn't seem like an organic fit, but you know, it's a great job. I mean, you get to talk to people, you get to sort of think about issues, and then, you know, you have the honor of basically trying to tell people's stories.
Was your job at the Washington Post your first journalism job?
Well, I had internships before that, but it was my first full-time journalism job, yeah.
Was that imposing the first day of work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was 23 years old. I was, like I said, shy, probably a little bit intimidated, which is not something that's really great. You know, that's not something that the newspaper really wants you to have as quality, but it really did toughen me up. I mean, it was really, it was a sort of a sink or swim environment, and it was exciting, you know, to be learning just almost by osmosis from people around me who are really good at their jobs, and to be pushed really hard. I think there are young people who start in small markets and get to cover sort of, you know, news really close to the ground. And, you know, I started off in a bigger pond, but, you know, covering national issues, and you know, it can be a little intimidating, I think. But I think a lot of the principles, whether you're in a small market or a big market, are the same. But I think I really am grateful for having been thrown into situations that I probably wouldn't have naturally put myself into.
Were you given the business and technology beat at the Post, or was this something you had an interest in before the job?
You know, it's interesting. I was a history major, and money was not a particular something that like motivated me deeply. So, and technology. I mean, I still, you know, to this day, I detest when my computer breaks down because I can't make sense of it. But I think, you know, sometimes what I brought to the table, I think, is actually a normal person's view of business and technology. Like, what is it that a normal person, not somebody who's heavily invested in those things, might be interested in? And so it's like, I think that's the perspective that I would bring, is, I wouldn't say a novice's perspective at this point, but you know, like an outsider's perspective, somebody who's not of those worlds. What do they care about? How does business change their lives? How does technology, you know, shape what they do or how they do things? I mean, these are things that, you know, as journalists, we're generalists, and we're trying to see things sort of from a broad perspective.
Were you sought out by NPR, or did you grow an interest of working for NPR?
Well, I always listened to NPR because my parents, that was what we listened to when I was commuting to school. So I, you know, I grew up listening to Linda Wertheimer and Noah Adams, and you know, I just found myself sort of, I guess the way NPR listeners do, like losing themselves in a story or learning things that you didn't know. And I never, like I said, I never really imagined myself being on air, but I had a surreal experience of Noah Adams being my mentor when I got to NPR. And so I had my own like sort of fangirl moment. But you know, I think it's just, you know, NPR called me when I was at the Post, and I was looking for something new to do, something different. And I think, you know, newspaper, it's sort of a lot of the reporting discipline is the same, but you know, radio is so creative. You use your voice, you use other people's voices. It's very intimate, and you really get a sense for someone's emotion, like in a almost three-dimensional way.
In a very general sense, can you talk about a couple of things you've learned in your years of covering business and the economy? It seems kind of boring and dry from the outside, but I think when you work in it every day, you find that everything revolves around these issues.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because, you know, like I said, I'm a business reporter. I cover economy. These things can sort of make you, your eyes roll back in your head if you're not particularly interested. But if you really think about it, I mean, I cover everything that touches money, everything that might touch like technology or, you know, and that's everything. So, I mean, I really think of myself first as somebody who covers, like, for example, I have a particular focus on workplace coverage. I mean, I cover the hours between, you know, when everyone works, like what's relevant to you when you work, everything from your relationship with your manager, you know, your like the way you get your work done, whether you have benefits, grievances that people have, sexual harassment issues. These are the things, though, that people really think about, that really touch their lives. So it's not really just about profit and loss and accounting and things that, you know, about numbers. It's really about the people behind those numbers.
There's a story that you did, I think it was either on or very close to Valentine's Day this year, and it falls under the category of my favorite type of NPR stories, which are little niche stories that you don't think about. It was about how when you break up with someone, you still have shared passwords for Hulu and Netflix. Great story, but I've got to know, where did the spark of that story come from?
That's funny. Well, I was using an old Netflix account of somebody that I had dated for several years, and so it occurred to me that, you know, I really ought to transition to a new account, my own account, and so that was sort of the genesis of it. And like as I thought about it, I thought, you know, there are so many ways in which our digital lives become intertwined. You know, think about all the things like paper and things that we used to carry around with us that we no longer do. There's so much of our, or the CDs. Like back in the day when you broke up with somebody, if it was not a great breakup, you would throw those things outside the lawn. And I thought, well, how do people disentangle themselves now? And you know, we're still human beings, you know, we still have relationships and feelings that go awry or whatever it is. And, you know, you still have to disentangle. And I just thought there's just so much human drama around that. And I want to know how that's changed.
Do you enjoy stories that are kind of tangentially related to business and the economy that you can kind of seek out like that story?
Oh, I live for those stories. I love stories because, you know, to me, it's like I go out and I find people to tell these stories. And in that example, the story about sort of Netflix breakups and, you know, when you change your Spotify account from your ex-boyfriend's account, or as in the case of that story, actually, a lot of people continued to use their ex's accounts for years. You know, it's something that people don't think about or don't realize that they are thinking about. And so those stories are just so fun because I get to talk to people who are so candid about their lives, and it's so relatable. And I think that's what makes those stories really work. And I love those stories. I mean, they don't come every day, but it's sort of, I just love having something like that on my plate, because, you know, I think news is many different things, but, you know, when we get to think about things that make us laugh or smile or reflect on our lives, I think that's the most fun.
On a much more serious topic, you won a Gracie Award for your coverage of opioids on workers in the workplace. Is it difficult ever to approach someone who has suffered the death of a loved one or someone who is going through the throes of addiction? I mean, how do you insert yourself into that narrative without feeling like you're being intrusive?
Well, I mean, it is difficult, is the short answer, but I think the longer answer is, you know, like I said, I'm an introvert. I'm sort of shy and quiet by nature. If you put me in a party, I'm likelier to be in a corner than in the middle of the room. But, you know, when you're reporting, I think of myself as, you know, a representative of the public interest. And that's true whether I'm talking to the CEO of a company or somebody who's grieving. But I think when you're talking to somebody who's really going through a difficult spot, I mean, there's no substitute for empathy, you know. And, you know, in that instance, I was talking to a grieving parents, and I had interviewed their daughter earlier, you know, and she was talking about her opioid addiction and the fact that she'd lost so many friends. And then she herself then passed several months after I had interviewed her. So, you know, it is paramount, I think, as a reporter to be aware of where your sources are and, you know, to empathize, because, you know, you are a representative of the public, but, you know, you're not necessarily entitled to this information. You are, you know, honored to receive it. And I think, you know, there is, art reporting is much more art than science, probably, you know, and sort of reading people and understanding where they are, that's always going to get you sort of the best story, because it's probably, you're going to get the most honest version of what they have to say. And, you know, I actually find that a lot of people, even in really acute situations, are willing to share. I find that in some of the worst, most tragic situations, people really bring out the best of their humanity. And I find that so inspiring. I've seen it time and time again. And, you know, when someone's grieving for a loved one, they actually want to talk about their loved one a lot. And it's an opportunity for them to shape the story as it's happening, and to give their grief some meaning. And so I think it was just a mutually rewarding experience.
As you know, this region is hard hit by the opioid crisis. Do you see a path forward for this country out of this addiction to opioids?
I mean, that's something I've wondered about a lot, is, you know, how... I mean, the genesis of the original story that I did on the opioid crisis, it was actually two different series. The first series had to do with, you know, we have this burgeoning opioid problem, you know, and because it's hard to, I mean, you know, at the same time, we have a very low unemployment rate. And so, you know, I had been hearing that employers were having difficulty finding workers, but, you know, how much of that difficulty is being shaped by addiction? Like, that's what I wanted to know. So that's what I set out to report on. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of things that are difficult to pinpoint in terms of how we get out of this situation, because, you know, in some ways the drug technology is changing, you know, at the same time. And you know, there's a lot of hope for medically assisted treatments like Suboxone or mm-hmm. methadone or, you know, but, you know, at the same time, we know that the power of these drugs is increasing exponentially. And so those are things that are very, very difficult to know how that's going to actually pan out. And I think, you know, in a lot of communities, it taps into a kind of desperation you know, an economic desperation or just a personal desperation. And, you know, for people who are addicted, you know, there's a biological component, there's a psychological component. It's a very, very difficult disease to tackle, and there's no one front to it. So, I mean, I think that I would like to say that communities can sort of find the resources and find the right solution, but it is an extremely difficult problem to address. It's extremely expensive for individual families, for communities to try to tackle. I wish I had the answer, you know. And what we see now is that, you know, as the opioid epidemic, you know, as the availability of like pills goes down, that, you know, meth use is increasing. And so there is this kind of transient quality to addiction that makes it particularly hard, I think, to tackle. It's an area I'd like to do a lot more reporting in, though.
Do you have a favorite story or a story you've done that you're most proud of?
I love the stories like the Netflix breakup story, or I did a story about like what is apparently the most common workplace etiquette problem, which is people stealing each other's lunches. You know, these are things that make me laugh, and I love those stories because I think that kind of levity is important. But I mean, I've also been deeply touched by the opioid story that you mentioned. You know, I did a story about a group of inmates who were getting internships, you know, who had gotten degrees in college and were getting internships to try to bridge from their incarceration to employment. And I was floored at how inspired I felt doing that piece. It wasn't what I expected. And I think, you know, there are stories where you find unexpected human dramas playing out. And those are the stories that I don't know if it's pride exactly. I just feel like I'm so privileged to be a part of that, to be exposed to that. You know, when I was in Japan after the tsunami, it was a very difficult, desolated place. I mean, it was completely wiped out, the places where I was reporting. And yet, you know, again, the surprise was that, you know, people were so resilient and so kind and like just brought the best of themselves. And so, you know, there's this kind of, it feels like an honor sometimes to be in those moments. And I think, you know, I for me, like that's what's restorative and just like, it gives me a sense, it renews my sense of purpose around journalism.
What role does music play in your life?
I grew up as a cellist, a concert cellist. Wow. So it's funny because I think in my yearbook, people identified me as most likely to be like a member of an orchestra, not a journalist. But it wasn't really something that I wanted to do professionally. But, you know, I have a deep appreciation for music. I think that, you know, as a child, you know, I think music teaches empathy. You know, I think it's a great creative outlet. And now, I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, a lot of my kids' music. You know, I have like certain, to me, it transports me into a mindset or an era. And I love to cook, so I love to listen to music and cook. Like, it's a way of shaping my mindset.
You selected five songs, and I'll just briefly ask you to comment on them. Ava Cassidy doing Over the Rainbow?
Yeah, Ava Cassidy was a D.C. Musician. She died at 32 of cancer, but she has this beautiful voice, and I love the song Over the Rainbow. And it's one that I just love the sort of angelic quality of her voice. I love the sort of innocence of that, and I think, you know, it also makes me think about her life and, you know, the shortness of that, but just like leaving behind this beautiful tune. It's funny because I gave my father, well, it's from an old album actually, and so I gave my dad at the time a CD of her music, and he listened to it, I think, every day, all day for about 6 months straight. it was interesting. So I have this sort of emotional attachment to that CD, that album and that song.
Alison Krauss and Union Station, A Living Prayer.
Again, I have this very, I have an affinity for very, simple songs. I love hymns because they're simple tunes that everyone can sing. It's like a very democratic way of creating music together. But Alison Krauss's voice is just amazing. To me, it's just, it's so simple that it's, it has to be perfect. And it feels like the perfect kind of voice. If there was, I just think it's just the combination of the spiritual music and her voice is just amazing.
The band Perry, If I Die Young.
So this is a song that it ties back to the opioid series that I did. The parents of the woman who passed away a few months after I had interviewed her were talking about the importance of this song to her, to them. It was something that one of Katie's friends told them was one of her favorite songs that she would always play in their car. And it's about a woman who dies young. And it's so poignant. And it's a way for me to, I'm still close to those families. And I like to sometimes play that in the car and sort of think about her and her family and just sort of connect to this, to their suffering and their, and to the memories of reporting out there.
So those stories that you cover, they never really leave you, do they?
That one certainly will never leave me. When you make a connection with people on that level, I just think that you go through something together and something is forged. A bond is forged. And so I still think about Katie and I still think about their family and I still talk to their family, actually.
Post Malone and Sway Lee with Sunflower.
this is the theme song to the Spider-Man movie,
yep.
The latest Spider-Man movie, which I chose this song, A, because I don't control the dial in my car as much anymore now that I have kids who want to listen to certain things. I'm sure parents can relate to that. But I chose it because I really loved this movie, and I love the theme of the movie, which is about a kid who becomes a superhero but doesn't actually embrace his superhero-ness. And I think, as a parent of young children, I feel like, I want my kids to get in touch with their power, and I think that's such a great message, is that this sort of superhero can live in you and you just kind of have to actualize it and realize it and embrace it. And I just love the message of that. And it just reminds me of my kids.
And finally, Clean Bandit, Sean Paul and Anne Marie with Rockabye.
Okay, so I am a single mother. I'm raising these two boys on my own. And it's become a huge part of my identity, being a single mom. And I just love this song because it's like an ode, an anthem to single moms. It's talks about the daily sort of hoofing it, just struggles of being, responsible for young lives. And it gets me pumped up when I'm struggling to get to the bus stop on time or, whatever it is, just not making it to a school performance and just kind of feeling, like I can't do it all. I mean, I know that there are a lot of single parents out there. I know a number of single parents who are in my situation as well. And it's just, I just, anything that sort of lifts parents up who are just, doing it on their own, I'm all for it.
You'll be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Rather West Kentucky Museum. Will it be a general overview of the types of stories you're covering?
Yeah, so the public event is I think it's going to be a Q&A. I would love to take questions from the audience and see what you guys are interested in, whether it's, there's a lot going on in Washington that affects communities like Murray. Whether it's, tariffs or, other things that I cover, or whether it's just about journalism. I welcome all questions.
Well, Yuki, thank you so much for speaking with me today and for bringing these songs that we're going to listen to in just a moment.
All right. Thank you, Tracy. It's been great.
Yuki Noguchi is NPR Business Desk correspondent.